It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is an important amendment to advance the readiness of our fighting force and to save precious taxpayer money. It repeals the policy instituted last summer by then Secretary of Defense Ash Carter without any input from members of Congress, which allows transgender individuals to serve and be recruited in the military. This policy is ill-conceived and contrary to our goals of increasing troop readiness and investing defense dollars into addressing budget shortfalls of the past. By recruiting and allowing transgender individuals to serve openly in our military, we are subjecting taxpayers to high medical costs, including an average of $130,000 per transition surgery, lifetime hormone treatments, and potential additional surgeries to address the average 25% of individuals who experience complications in addition to possible mental health issues and costs of training, the new policy. The surgeries alone are estimated to cost $1.35 billion over the next 10 years, and that is with the assumption of only 30% of individuals choosing to transition. That equivalent money could fund 13 F-35s, 14 Super Hornet F-18s, 2 B-21 long-range strike bombers, 8 KC-46, all A-10 wing replacements, or increase the end strength of our troops.
That was Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler explaining her amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act that failed last Thursday. And this is Sandy Rios in the morning with you. This is probably the biggest news story to me. I'm just shocked still. 24 Republicans joined all the Democrats in deciding that the military will indeed continue to recruit transgender persons to pay for their hormone therapy treatments, but in addition to that, pay for their surgeries, removing various organs and replacing them with other organs. And the way the regulation reads, they will have 2 years in the military on military pay before they can even be considered to go into and kind of actually working. So it's like it's a way of transgendered persons to join up, be supported, get their surgeries, their hormones treatments free, and then maybe or maybe not actually be deployed, depending on how they test, etc. It is shocking to me. I have to say it's absolutely shocking to me. And let me hasten to add that my understanding of the inside workings of this, Vicki Hartzler had a really good amendment that would have prevented any kind of expenditure on surgeries and also would have not allowed the military, would have reversed Ash Carter's directive under Barack Obama to recruit transgenders and bring them in and pay for everything. It would have reversed everything. But she was persuaded by leadership not to bring that. That was just a bridge too far. So she was persuaded not to bring that amendment forward, and she didn't. So what did she do? She brought the lesser of the two. She brought the lesser, which actually just would not have allowed funding for hormonal treatment or transgender surgeries. And you already heard it described in that clip how costly they are for all the reasons that we know. It's multiple surgeries laid out in various succession. They don't happen at once. But guess what? So they talked her into introducing that on the floor, which she did on Thursday, but it failed. It failed. 24 Republican congressmen voted against that amendment. I mean, it is absolutely shocking. I haven't got time to read down all of the Congress people that voted against it. Justin Amash from Michigan was one of them, which was a shock to many people. Daryl Issa out of California, and I'm just picking out two. There's a lot more, and if you want to find it, you can find it online for sure. And by the way, the Center for Military Readiness under Elaine Donnelly had already been warning about this, the costs of it, the effects on morale. Our soldiers have received a notice, not it happened before Thursday, that they could just get ready because you're going to be taking showers with people who have have parts that you maybe are not used to showering with. So just be prepared and, you know, get used to it. It's basically what the memo said. So here we go. Thank you, Republicans. And I have to say, our friend Daniel Horowitz hastened to add in his article about this that if the leadership had wanted to do anything about this, they could have whipped the votes to stop it, but they didn't. They didn't do anything to stop it. Now it has to go to the Senate, and we'll find out. You know, the Senate is worse than the House, so I don't hold out a lot of hope. Their rules are different, and I don't yet know exactly how that's going to play out, but I don't have high hopes. I don't. I mean, the whole world has gone mad. You know, it's true that the Democrats have gone so far to the left, but they've managed to pull the Republicans with them. So what used to be, you know, what used to be outrageous is now embraced, whether it's on health care or on transgender issues, but it's still more moderate than the wildly off-the-cliff position of the Democrats. And so here you go. The other thing that they voted for that they did not stop was you know, fighting the weather. Remember when Barack Obama said global warming, climate change, every branch of the military, every endeavor was going to have to, you know, fold in money to fight climate change. So they didn't do anything about that either, by the way. Just thought I would share. And that reminds me, I just want to run into this quickly. This is really ironic because someone sent this to me this morning. The National Republican Campaign Committee, which funds, works against all good, strong conservatives. They run ads. They do everything they can. They spread rumors and falsehoods. They push forward candidates who are not conservative at all. That's why they voted like they just voted, because the National Republican Campaign Committee made sure to get people like we have now who won't even vote against transgender surgeries paid for by the U.S. military. So I digress. The National Republican Campaign Committee just sent out a little email to some of you may have received this, and this is what it says. Dear fellow conservative, the liberal elites have damaged our country for too long. In the last election, we promised to drain the swamp in our nation's capital. Now, on the day of our capital being established, let everyone know you voted to drain the swamp with this exclusive license plate. And the license plate, you know, has a little tag on it that says, drain the swamp. No more unelected bureaucrats making the decisions, fellow conservative. So cynically, I'm telling you, people inside the Beltway who know all about this, who are my advisors on these issues, just cannot believe the jaw-dropping lies and hypocrisy that's happening. I've told you about it. Now they're going to sell a license plate. And don't you dare contribute to this, by the way. You find a conservative who's running in a race somewhere in this country, and you give to that campaign, not to this ridiculously ludicrous, duplicitous group called the National Republican Campaign Committee. And by the way, for instance, Mitch McConnell is already running ads against Mel Brooks in Alabama, telling everyone that he... what does he say? He attacked Donald Trump trying to stop him. You know, running an ad as though Mo Brooks is some, you know, liberal Republican, which he was not. He supported Ted Cruz over Donald Trump. That's true. But that would describe a lot of people, wouldn't it? And so Mitch McConnell and this their pack is trying to distort Mo Brooks's record. And, of course, they're not attacking Justice Moore, because Justice Moore is way ahead in the race. So it's really interesting. It's, you know, drain the swamp license plates. Well, I'm not quite sure how to respond to that, except we really need to drain the actual swamp, which includes the NRCC and the Republican leadership. And by the way, the Republican leadership are all converging on a fundraiser for Mike Pence. Mike, it looks as though Mike has formed a pack. They're going to be having a big event, raising a lot of money. And so people are speculating that Mike Pence is positioning himself just in case, you know. I have no comment on that, except that I don't feel good about that. Could I just say If what I'm hearing from lots of sources is true, I don't feel real good about that. Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy and others are going to be there. They're all excited, you see, about the possibility of Mike Pence, you know, being ready on the sidelines. And by the way, the ABC, I don't think I have this in my hand, but ABC Washington Post has just done a survey about Donald Trump's popularity, and it has fallen like 3 points since the spring, and they're excited about that. And they polled people on the Russia issue and found out that more people are believing there was collusion or ties to Russia. Of course, I can't imagine why people would think that, since the Washington Post and ABC and the other outlets have been giving us a steady diet of that. There's another thing that I just must talk about, and that is health care. Let's listen to cut four, and then I'll talk.
Alan in Southern Maryland, you're on WMAL. Go, Alan.
I'm sick of the Donald Trump stuff, all the Trump stuff. I consider myself one of the forgotten men and women. I'm worried about job creation. I'm worried about tax cuts. I need more money. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. They just cut off my cable bill. I'm rubbing two nickels together. My girl can't find a job to help me. We're out here struggling. And these people don't get it. I mean, they really don't get it. I don't have money. I mean, I'm cutting back on my medicine, my groceries. She can't find a job.
Do you feel like the president, Alan?
All right, I'm going to interrupt. That's just part of it. That's Larry O'Connor on WMAL in Washington. Used to be one of my favorite stations when I was there. But the point is the man. This is what Americans are facing. While the leaders in the Senate play games with their lives. We find out today that John McCain has a blood clot, had a blood clot that was discovered allegedly in a routine physical. I have to tell you that doctors that I've seen a comment on this have said that this doesn't happen in a routine situation like this. And they think it's much more serious than they think. So McConnell has delayed the vote until McCain comes back. But people are saying this is very, okay, there are conflicting views. His campaign is saying, oh, no big deal. He'll be back in a week. Others are saying this is a very big deal. And so I don't know what that means to health care. They need every vote they can get, and they can't pass it without him, I don't think. Rand Paul is holding fast, and I say God bless Rand Paul on voting for this Republican health care plan. Then one other story I just must get in before we have this break. Remember, many of you will remember when I interviewed Bernard Sansrique, who was an official from Haiti, who gave the most compelling interview last year about how the Clinton Foundation had raped and pillaged Haiti. A shocking story. Well, just over the weekend, Klaus Eberwein, a former Haitian government official who was expected to testify against Clinton Foundation corruption and malpractice, was found dead in Miami via a gunshot wound to the head. He was 50 years old, and they ruled it suicide. But people around him, he was supposed to appear next Tuesday before the Haitian Senate Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission. Now he's going to appear because allegedly they think, he must have committed suicide. He had expressed to people that he was afraid that his life was in danger. And so he says that according to what he was going to testify to, a paltry 0.6% of donations granted by international donors to the Clinton Foundation with the express purpose of directly assisting Haitians actually ended up in the hands of Haitian organizations, 0.6%. A further, a 9.6% ended up with the Haitian government. But the remaining 89.8% or $5.4 billion were funneled to non-Haitian organizations. I don't know how much of that went to the Clinton Foundation, but we tracked that with Bernard in our interview last year. We're going to put that on our Facebook page. The point is, this man, Klaus Eberwein, by his friends, said he was very happy. They never ever thought he was talking about plans for the future. And now, allegedly, he killed himself. Does that sound familiar with people who are getting ready to oppose the Clintons? Isn't it just a way too much of a coincidence? I just think it's shocking. I just have to say that. Klaus Eberwein, that story is in WND. We'll put that on our Facebook page as well. And if you haven't heard the interview I did with Bernard Sansrique, you'll want to hear this. Again, it'll be on our Facebook page and you can listen. It's just amazing. All right, well, that's a quick rundown of some of the news. But when we come back, what is transgenderism all about? What's happening? Why are they becoming so powerful? And what's our future with this movement? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel. in March. And we'd love for you to come along with us. You know, one of the frequent questions I get when I talk about our trip to the Holy Land, people say to me, Tim, is it safe to go on your trip? To which I respond, you know, we won't be in New York but a few hours. So we're going to Israel. Israel is a safe or safer than any other place in the world. They take their security very, very seriously. So if you'd like to join us as we see Jerusalem and Bethlehem and the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and all the other places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible, we'd love to have you join us. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or for our brochure, call 800-FAMILIES. That's 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Hey, I'm David Ware from Hillsong Worship. No matter how trapped you might feel by drug or alcohol addictions, there is a way to break free and find a new life in Jesus Christ.
Hi, I'm Lance. The last 20 years of my life have been just drinking and fighting alcohol. I was ready to just say, I'm never going to beat this. So this is my shot, being here at Teen Challenge and getting a grip of reality and what God really wants for my life, because He wants so much more. That's what Teen Challenge offers you, that we can't, He can. Why don't we let God change us?
Teen Challenge helps both teens and adults find freedom from addictions to drugs and alcohol. If you or a loved one is ready to experience a new life of freedom and hope, you can tell Teen Challenge toll-free at 1-855-END-ADDICTION or visit them online at teenchallengeusa.com. You're listening to American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump's portrait is no longer displayed in Jackson, Wyoming's town hall. Our duly elected president's picture has been replaced by Chief Washakie, a Native American warrior. Mayor Pete Muldoon told me he stands by his decision, says he's under no federal mandate to post the president's picture. The mayor went on to say only dictators like Joseph Stalin require their portraits to be displayed. He said many residents of Jackson intensely dislike the president, find his political views odious. The mayor went on to compare the official presidential portrait to a photo of a grocery store manager. Mayor Pete Muldoon's decision to remove President Trump's portrait illustrates the left's complete and utter disregard for tradition, decorum, and basic social graces. To be clear, Mr. Mayor, Donald Trump is the president of the United States, not the manager of a Piggly Wiggly. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, this whole issue of transgenderism has, whether I want to be interested in it or not, I've been sort of drawn into it. I've been following, you know, the issue of the radical homosexual movement for decades now, really. When I was at CWA, we had a family institute directed by Bob Knight, and I was covering it on radio in Chicago for many years, but then that's when my expertise increased because of the information. We were probably one of the only groups in D.C. actually fighting this, and I found that when we left, after I left CWA and went back to Washington after several years, there was hardly anyone fighting this. And in the ensuing period of time, so much had happened. There was just nobody standing against it. I was talking with my husband just a few days ago, and he was saying, you know, what's the use? It's as though it is such a massive force and everyone's caving. I just told you about what happened with the vote in the House just on Thursday. So what's the point? Well, the point is that if we do not stand up and speak out about what's true and what isn't true, It will be more, it will be worse than even we could possibly imagine. I heard a horrible story just a few days ago, and this is not fit for children's ears. Really, it isn't. So I'm going to proceed with this, but I don't think your kids should hear this. I was hearing an interview about a woman who's into rescuing girls in sexual trafficking, and they had just managed to rescue at the last minute an 18-month-old baby. And that's all I'm going to say. My point is this. If you think this is it's gone as far as it's going to go, you're not right about that. I have seen through the years that the movement marches on and covers territory we never could have ever imagined. And so I noticed a really great article written by Susan Berry, Dr. Susan Berry, last week. Susan is a writer for Breitbart. She's also, she has her doctorate in psychology. And so I've asked her to join us this morning to talk about this issue and where we stand with it. I've already, again, explained to you what happened and what's happening in the military. But, of course, the whole issue is much broader than that. So, Susan, thanks for joining me this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Sandy.
All right, so we've come a long way, Susan. I remember the last time I really covered this issue with where kids were concerned, besides transgender bathrooms, was that Massachusetts schools were kind of the first to move out and start assigning children official names in classroom that were not their own gender. So kids were required to call them by that name, and the schools would not inform the parents, and the children who were going by a different gender name were allowed to use the bathrooms of the opposite gender. That is the first time I had heard this movement gaining some traction. So, but where are we now?
Well, where we are is what's happened recently, this the blow-up of this issue. It actually happened on Twitter. We had actor James Woods, who is a conservative, and he actually just put it out there when he captioned a photo of a young boy dressed as a girl with his parents at a pride parade, and the parents were showing off signs that read, you know, "I love my gender creative son, and my son wears dresses and makeup, get over it." And James Woods just tweeted out the caption that, you know, "Wait until this poor kid grows up and realizes what you've done and, you know, stuffs both of you into a freezer in the garage." I mean, getting across the idea that, you know, you think you're supporting your kid by allowing your kid to, you know, become part of this transgender culture and really putting your son out there. And yet what's happening is that, you know, you're really doing psychological damage to your son, you know. And I think that that's what's happening, is that we're having these parents that are, you know, caught up in this cultural shift that, you know, it's really important, you know, if your child says that they're a boy or a girl and they're really the opposite sex, that, you know, well, we should be really supporting that, you know, because, again, the fear that these parents have in their minds is that if they don't support it, their child is going to commit suicide. And this has really been the leverage that the far left and the radical LGBTQ movement, this is the leverage that they have been using with parents especially, that, you know, if you don't support it, if you don't totally affirm your child's other gender, then, you know, you're going to end up with a kid who's dead. And it's really unfortunate, because what's happened is this kind of a way of thinking has really so influenced even our laws. I mean, we certainly know about the bathroom laws and all that, but also just in terms of states that have passed laws against any kind of therapy that might not immediately affirm a change in a child's gender. And these laws, although, you know, and some people will say, well, they're well-meaning, but on the other hand, they're really not, because they really close off any kind of critical thinking about what's going on. You know, a therapist in these states that forbids this kind of therapy now doesn't even feel comfortable, you know, challenging the thought that a child is a different gender. They don't feel comfortable helping the child to explore this in treatment anymore, because they're afraid that they're going to be sued in some way. So I think that this is really just totally pervaded our culture. And I think we have more and more pediatricians and other groups that are coming out and saying, hey, we need to really look at this because this is really dangerous.
And at the same time, I think, Susan, the way I see this, our children are actually being recruited to experiment. Now, this happened, the first this came to my awareness was Teen Wire on Planned Parenthood. This is years ago. They were recruiting kids to experiment with homosexuality. They were teaching them about homosexual sex, how to use dental. I mean, unbelievable things that I even now, and that's so passé, but I can hardly say the words. And so they're being recruited. And so what's happening is then kids are starting to say, you know, and their parents are being recruited too, being totally saturated by cultural nonsense, like this situation, a reality show with this boy who dresses, who's beautiful, looks like a girl, Jazz. It's being mainstreamed. Mm-hmm. So kids then have always, Susan, haven't they, kids have always, some kids have often identified as the other gender, like girls think want to be tomboys.
Sure, yeah, exactly. You know, we years ago, you know, you would call them a tomboy, you know, or something like that. Or, I mean, really, you know, those kind of things, they can actually just be ignored, you know, and they, you know, they kind of work themselves out eventually. And most children who say that they're, if they know what that means to be transgender, nowadays they all do because they're taught about it even in school. You know, now if they're taught, if they think that they're transgender, you can just, you know, ignore that. But now you have to affirm it. You have to do everything possible to affirm it. And that's really where it's gone haywire psychologically. I mean, I just actually got off the Breitbart News radio show, and we talked about the other article that I just wrote about Teen Vogue. I mean, Teen Vogue and anal has a tutorial for young teens on how to perform anal sex. I mean, that's really what this is about. It's about, you know, this whole sexual culture where, you know, you're kind of doing deviant things and that this is okay. This is normal. It's normalizing what is actually not normal.
But and the sick thing about it is, it's one thing to do that with adults. It's quite another thing to prey upon innocent children, which is what's happening. You know, I can hardly talk about this without weeping. I just cannot bear to think what the left, the sexual anarchists, are doing to our children. And the parents now cooperating. So here's what happens, to my understanding, Susan, is that kids will sort of hint that they, or maybe want to, you know, be dressed like a boy or dressed like a girl, and then parents will leap at that to cooperate with this trendy approach to give them another gender name. And then what you're alluding to is that then in many states now, the therapy that would help a child kind of sort out, if it gets into pre-puberty and they're still identifying like that, therapy that would help them kind of think through this and sort out is being banned. It's only gender, what they call gender affirming, right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's been banned, you know, in states like New Jersey and Connecticut. So, you know, it just really cuts off. I mean, even a group of, I would say they're on the left, you know, they're pro-gay rights group called Youth Gender Professionals. They're a group of, you know, mental health professionals and ethicists and what have you. I mean, they support gay rights themselves, but they think this is ridiculous. They said, how can you totally close off any kind of critical thinking process for these children? You know, that to say that they're not allowed to go to a therapist that doesn't immediately affirm that they are a transgender child. And, you know, what that leads into, Sandy, I think is what you're saying is that, you know, fine, if an adult, you know, wants to go through medical treatments to change their gender, that's one thing. But when you're talking about a prepubescent child who then, if you're affirming their gender in a treatment situation or the parents are affirming it, then you're going on to the next step, which is, you know, puberty blockers, you know, puberty suppressants, those hormonal treatments. And what that does is obviously, you know, stops the process of puberty so that the child doesn't develop the sexual attributes of, you know, their actual biological sex. And so now you're playing with their bodies, and, you know, the problem is that we have very, very scant research on how this all plays out. I mean, what are the ramifications? You know, what are the consequences of these kinds of therapies? And, you know, more and more researchers are saying, you know, we don't have any information. You're sending children into these kinds of treatments that are not scientifically backed up. There's no evidence that they actually are even encourage the well-being of children in any way. It's just merely to bring about this political change, this cultural change, and we're really harming children during the whole process.
You know, Susan, this kind of thing has been being pushed forward for a long time. It's just way under the radar. I remember probably 15 years ago, there was a group called Outright Vermont, and this was before gay marriage was legalized in New England and Massachusetts. But Outright Vermont was a very radical, rabid group, and they had a training session for teachers, and they were showing pictures. Oh gosh, this discussion is so bad for kids. I don't know if you want if you want your kids to be equipped to handle this and understand what the truth is, you should let them hear. But I'm just warning you for younger children. They were showing slides to teachers and even kids who would come in of girls, young girls who had had their healthy breasts removed because they thought they were boys. So this is the next step. It's hormone blockers. It's and then it's removal of healthy organs in order to and then later it's the whole gambit of the sex change. Susan, did you not say, I thought I read in your article that you said something about these hormone blockers making the kids sterile. Is that right?
Well, there is some evidence about that, that there's sterilization is, in fact, some people will say sterilization is actually the agenda, that is the goal of this whole movement. To become genderless or to force gender ideology. I mean, it's become really an ideology. And, you know, at some point, more and more people have caught on to the idea that this is about really sterilizing people so that, you know, population control type of maneuver. And so I think that there's so many ramifications of this that what it strikes me, I actually quoted Camille Paglia. She is actually, liberal, and she herself says she considers herself to be transgender, but she totally confronts the left with their hypocrisy on this issue. You know, she says, like, it's amazing, you know, liberals posture as defenders of science when it comes to global warming, which isn't even scientific, she said, but, you know, they throw that up. And yet, in all these other issues, they don't want to listen to what the science is telling us. The science is telling us right now that, you know, this is harmful to children. You know, we know that other things like abortion can be harmful as well. And yet we still are promoting this in our culture because we're trying to get to some point in what, you know, people on the far left think is our cultural panacea, you know. So, unfortunately, you know, young children are getting, they're the victims of this. And it's just, you know, I think it's just a wake-up call to us. I mean, people like James Woods, he got terribly criticized on Twitter. But, you know, I think he's kind of, you know, a voice in the wilderness. You know, he's kind of saying, hey, you know, what are we doing here? You know, even parents are you know, affirming their child's gender change. And you know, there's no attempt to even, you know, look at this whole thing critically.
Yeah, Susan, before I have to say goodbye to you, I want to include a stat that you include in your article. 98% of gender-confused boys and 88% of gender-confused girls eventually accept their biological sex after passing through puberty. So that's an important stat that you cite that I think needs to be stated. Susan's article will be on our Facebook page, Transgender: James Woods Ignites Debate Over Significant Risks to Children. Dr. Susan Berry. Susan, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for this article.
Oh, thank you, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Okay, talk to you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. No one likes to suffer difficult circumstances. In this era of easy believism, it's often conveyed, if life isn't always smooth, we're doing something wrong. The scripture teaches us, however, that our Lord often meets fruitful branches with additional pruning. The pruning is not punishment. It's actually to make us even more fruitful. If you're in a rough spot right now, take heart. What may feel like the squeeze to end all squeezes could very well be the Lord's pruning for additional fruitfulness. When the Lord prunes us, he does so for our good.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Robert Jeffress, and I want to congratulate Tim Wildman and all of my friends at American Family Association on 40 years of faithfully standing for the truth of God's Word. I'm grateful for the way that American Family Association remains steadfast in defending the eternal truths of God's Word. Congratulations again on 40 years of faithfulness, and may God continue to bless American Family Association.
You would not stop talking about stealing just because you know people who are in your congregation who have stolen.
Janet Mefford.
That's where we get it all twisted in our minds, because we are treating certain sins as different from others. And in God's mind, sin is sin. You're not condemning people simply because you're talking about sin. It's not the sin that will go to hell, right? It's going to be the person who goes to hell apart from Christ. Join me for Janet Mefford Live, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
The Bible is inspired because its nature is the self-revelation of God. In other words, the authority of the Bible is the authority of God. Behind your doctrine of Scripture is a doctrine of God. The product of Scripture is the activity of God. The Scripture is the product of God the Holy Spirit, which is why God the Holy Spirit uses it in conversion and in sanctification. So what we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source. And because we believe God to be the author of the Bible, we talk about the quality of the Bible as inspired or God-breathed.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Over 7 million Venezuelans turned out yesterday in a massive collective and desperate plea for help to prevent the regime of Nicolas Maduro from completing its destruction of their country, economy, and lives. That regime banned the plebiscite, but as many voted against Maduro as in the last free election that gave the opposition control of parliament. Maduro responded that time by effectively stripping the National Assembly of its power. On July 30th, he will use a rigged ballot to complete Venezuela's transformation from a nominally democratic failed state into a full-blown dictatorship. How can America help the people of Venezuela avoid that fate and the ominous implications for our own security of an unchecked, radical leftist government in this hemisphere with immense oil reserves and ties to Cuba, Iran, China, and Russia? Stop buying the regime's oil and stop selling it gasoline. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
More people watch Nick at Night cartoons than CNN today.
Our ratings are doing just fine.
You are now at 13th place in national ratings behind Nick at Night, which is at 11.
You used that line on Monday, and you know it was sort of mildly
Tucker
amusing
Carlson
on Monday.
Gets but 4 million viewers. You barely scratched 800,000. In the last 9 months, you and your colleagues and the fake news media, CNN, MSNBC, New York Times,
sir,
Washington Post.
I'm going to finish.
You know who leaked the information? Do you have those identities?
I'm asking you, do you believe
I'm asking you.
Well, I can't answer that, sir.
Do you know? You've seen that leadership from the southern border to NATO to Warsaw to the economy to the stock market. We're crushing it, and he can do that from anywhere.
All right, well, the White House doesn't crush a stock market, but I do appreciate your time.
That's
Thanks for joining
it's
me this
It's a common
morning.
Phrase. It means winning.
Thanks for helping me with the common phrase.
You're welcome.
Crushing it.
Anytime.
That was Sebastian Gorka in a montage of various appearances on CNN, and I'm not sure what else. He was on MSNBC, but certainly I think two or three of them on CNN, sort of giving them you know what. So Sebastian, of course, works for the administration, and Sebastian is an expert on security, national security, and Islam, and other things. He was raised in Hungary. If you listen to my show, you've heard Sebastian many times. Sebastian was raised understanding communism very clearly, and he's become just, you know, a champion, really, to fight back at the media. He was on with Sean Hannity to talk about those appearances, and I wanted you to hear what he had to say. Let's listen.
Sooner or later, somebody has to push back. We've got beautiful, intelligent women like Kellyanne. We've got, you know, brave professionals like Sean Spicer. Somebody has to be the president's pit bull, and I'm ready. Take it to them. They had a reputation, Sean. They had a reputation. CNN in the war zones, MSNBC. It's gone like a puff of smoke. They have a credibility crisis. Think about what they're doing. They've been in this collusion delusion for 9 months. Not one piece of illegal evidence of any illegal activity, and they spin and they spin. They're tanking. Somebody has to make them wake up, and I'm glad to help them. Sean, they've made a decision. My White House colleague, Andrew Sarabian, he coined the phrase last week, the fake news industrial complex. There's two ways to be successful in your business, Sean. One way is to go after the ratings with sensationalism, with lies, lies about Tony Scaramucci, lies about what Mueller's going to testify. Just spin, spin, so you make more money. They have a psychological issue. It really is a psychological issue. They cannot believe that the American people chose Donald J. Trump to be president. As a result, they're in this bubble, they're in this psychological crisis, they're tanking, so they spin, they want to make more money on ratings, so their corporate owners are happy. The only way to be successful in this business on the long term, the only way is to do what you do, Sean. It's about truth. You say that you're a conservative, but you're interested in the truth, whether it's about Benghazi,
Absolutely.
The IRS scandal, Fast and Furious. They don't care about the truth. Think about their professionalism or their lack of it. Could you imagine a Walter Cronkite or an Edward R. Murrow having a guest on their show, and then after the interview ends, in the next panel, they insult the guest when he can't defend himself? That's what Anderson Cooper did this week. That's
pathetic.
Just unprofessional.
All right, Sebastian Gorka explaining what he's doing, and he's actually doing a great job, I have to say. I want to bring you up to date on a couple of stories on this so-called Russian, you know, hopefully we'll get someday to the point where we don't have to talk about it, but until we can, our voices can cut through the noise about what's really happening here, we have to keep talking about it. And, you know, I mentioned earlier this Washington Post ABC poll. Here's the details of it. Of course, they're pretty happy about this. Trump's overall approval rating has dropped from 36% from 42% in April. And so his disapproval rating has risen 5 points to 58%. Overall, 48% say they disapprove strongly of Trump's performance. It was a level never reached by former presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Well, I wonder why. You suppose maybe it's because the Washington Post and ABC didn't hit them every night with outrageous criticisms and throwing everything but the kitchen sink, including the kitchen sink. And do you think it might have had something to do with that? But it says reached only in the second term, the low levels of George Bush in the post-ABC polling, the other president most recent that they tried to destroy in the media. So among Democrats, 8 in 10 believe Russia attempted to influence the election, and more than 6 in 10 think members of Trump's team attempted to aid their efforts. Among Republicans, a third think Russia tried to influence the election. Fewer than 1 in 10 thinks Trump's associates sought to help him. And so there's just a portion of that poll. But I want to tell you some details about the so-called Russian connection. Here I go again, mentioning Fusion GPS, the organization that prepared, paid for the dossier that was so absolutely salacious and false, by the way. So now we know that the researcher behind the dossier worked, he did that on behalf of an alleged former Russian spy. So the founder of Fusion GPS is Glenn Simpson. He worked last year for a guy named Renat Akhmetsin. It's a Washington, D.C.-based operative believed to be a former Russian counterintelligence agent. Simpson, a former Wall Street Journal reporter, was hired by Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton supporter, to dig up dirt on Trump. So then they gave it to the FBI. So here's the issue that Senator Chuck Grassley wants to investigate. He writes, "It is highly troubling that Fusion GPS appears to have been working with someone with ties to Russian intelligence, let alone someone alleged to have conducted political disinformation campaigns as part of a pro-Russia lobbying effort while simultaneously overseeing the creation of a Trump-Russia dossier." So, and then it goes into more details. We should put this on our Facebook page. It's out of the Daily Caller. So it looks like Fusion GPS reportedly was acting as an unregistered agent of Russian interests as they were preparing this dossier on Donald Trump. So it's so twisted. I told you that the KGB's modus operandi was to play a double, triple game, and maybe more than that, beyond which your brain gets so twisted you can't figure out what is what, and that's what they do very well. So it sounds as though we have evidence that Fusion GPS is working for both sides, like a Russian counterintelligence agent, which is evidently someone they were working with. So then there's the second part here. Now we know that the Russian attorney, Natalia Veselnitskaya, hired California Democratic former Congressman Ron Dellums as a lobbyist. He was on her payroll along with other high-profile Democratic partisans. They were on her staff. By the way, Dellum served 13 years in Congress as an African-American firebrand, proudly called himself a socialist. He was close to President Fidel Castro. He supported Cuba's military intervention in Africa. And I could go on and on with his record. His record is not good. It's not one of a patriot. It's one of a socialist slash, you know, the other word. And so he was on the payroll of this Russian attorney who went to see Donald Trump Jr. You don't smell anything fishy, do you? Anybody? I just don't know. And by the way, then, here comes another really important story. And this, interestingly enough, was published by Politico, which is no conservative outlet, I guarantee you. It's on the left. It used to be affiliated, I believe, with Newsweek. This is an article published January of this year. And here's the headline. Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. You may recall, I recall, that Vladimir Putin was able to mess with Ukraine pretty big during not only invading them, but also installing a leader who was more to their liking. So on the heels of that, this is what the political article says. Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by, one, publicly questioning his fitness for office. Number two, disseminating documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter, only to back away after the election. And then three, helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors. That's just the beginning. This is an article that's like 20, how long is this? It's 18 pages long. All right, so it's verified. Politico, again, no friend of the Trumps, itemizes and documents this real Ukrainian effort, all-out effort to destroy Trump's candidacy. So on ABC News, Adam Schiff, who is the minority leader of the House Intelligence Committee, he is the guy who managed to silence Devin Nunes. Remember, Devin Nunes was the guy who came out and did a last-minute press conference saying he just discovered all kinds of things with the unmasking of names, illegal, he believed, that he needed to make public. And so then suddenly, after a week or two, Devin Nunes is silenced because they started treating him as though he were public enemy number one, and then they brought ethics charges against him. That's why you haven't heard anything from him. So now the spokesperson for the committee is at the leftist Adam Schiff, who, by the way, is very convincing when he talks. Very, very convincing, I have to say. He does a good job of lying. Very good. Very good. He gets a gold star. So he's on ABC News, and ironically, the ABC News anchor asks him about this Ukraine business. Let's listen.
Okay, you've heard they've also pointed to this this issue with the Democratic Party and the Ukrainian embassy. This comes from a story in Politico that ran in January. The headline, Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. And I want to read from the article. A Ukrainian-American operative who was consulting for the DNC met with top officials in the Ukrainian embassy in Washington in an effort to expose ties between Trump, top campaign aide Paul Manafort, and Russia. The Ukrainian efforts had an impact in this race, helping force Manafort's resignation and advancing the narrative that the Trump campaign was deeply connected to Ukraine's foe to the east, Russia. So let me ask you, I understand Hillary Clinton lost, and I understand this effort was not as elaborate as the Russian effort, but was it acceptable, or would it have been acceptable for the Democrats to accept help from the Ukrainian government in this campaign?
No, it would be appropriate for the Democrats to accept help from the Ukrainian government.
Okay, so that's Adam Schiff admitting. But then he goes on, of course, to make the apologetics for it. You know, I'm not sure that, honestly, if the whole story, once it gets out, that the Ukrainian efforts to undermine Trump were less than the Russian efforts to whatever those might have been. And I'm not sure you can actually separate the two. Because the Ukrainian prime minister, from my understanding, was favored by Vladimir Putin. So I don't know if you can separate the two. I think that's, and I think, you know, Senator Grassley wants to investigate this, and God bless him for that. I just hope they can. I just hope they can. I just told you in the early part of the show that the gentleman who was going to testify this Tuesday against the Clinton Foundation and their part in raping and pillaging financially Haiti after the their big disaster was now allegedly has killed himself. Well, friends report that he was fine. There wasn't anything wrong. He was making plans for the future, but he had all of this damning information on the Clinton Foundation, and now he's dead. So my point is the stakes, okay, maybe he did kill himself. It's possible, like all the other people involved in Clinton scandals who tried to speak up, maybe they all did actually kill themselves too, or were in accidents. It's just becoming absolutely unfathomable. But my point is that there's danger in actually speaking the truth. There is danger, whether it's to your reputation, to your job, maybe even to your actual life. I remember interviewing, and you will recall, I interviewed several women who were trying to publicize Bill Clinton's sexual misdeeds, and how they had, Kathleen Willey was one of them, who was threatened. Her dog was killed and laid on her doorstep, and a man threatened her and mentioned her children, and he knew where they were, and she was scared to death. So I'm just saying there are serious consequences to truth tellers, and that's one of the reasons why I think members of Congress become so cowardly. They really are scared, some of them. Some of them don't care. They just really want to advance themselves, and so they're not tempted anyway to tell the truth, so it's not a problem. But we need to pray. I just read that President Trump had his private conversation with Theresa May made public. It actually says nothing wrong with the conversation, but the headline at the Sun UK says, "Jittery Donald Trump tells Theresa May to fix it," so he gets a warm welcome when he comes to the UK. Well, when you read his actual words, it's nothing like that. He just says, "I'm not coming until there's more support for me in Great Britain." Well, that's really, I mean, you just find out in these private conversations, he's still the same guy, not saying anything, you know, terribly nothing that you would be surprised at that comports to his outward conversations, much like when they called George Bush off mic one time and they thought they'd found something, but he was just being George Bush Jr. Anyway, this is Sandy Rios. It's been a pleasure spending this morning with you. I'll be back tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.